One of the antecedents for this meeting was a sort of legendary series of meetings held in the 50s and 60s called the Stevens Conferences in Hoboken, New York, where people gathered together. And the main purpose of those meetings was to, I'm pleased to say these were before my time.
Right.
But the main purpose was reputed to be that people got up and said what they were doing, and then had some interaction about it. What I've been doing for more time than I would care to admit is writing a book, an undergraduate relativity book. So I thought I would depart in the spirit of this historical association. I depart from the usual tradition of presenting research and just describe something about teaching general relativity to undergraduates. Our subject, general relativity, had its basic structure completed in 1915. It's an entirely classical theory of one of the four fundamental forces, the only one you can see on a macroscopic scale. Today, it underlies many important astrophysical phenomena. I was going to say all astrophysical phenomena, but Lars is in the room, right? black holes, gravitational collapse, gravitational waves, cosmology, neutron stars, etc., all of which relativity is important. And it's the intellectual origin for many of the ideas in contemporary particle physics. You wouldn't hear, I think, stories about extra dimensions or Kaluza-Klein or ADS-CFT correspondence if we had not had Einstein's theory. And yet this important subject, right, is in most undergraduate curricula in this country at least, gravity, is taught once in freshman physics as a circular orbit. And the next time, it's a second year graduate course for those designed, for those who want to commit to a lifetime in this area. I thought a long time ago that there must be some intermediate ground. It's especially appropriate today because the audience for our subject is changing. Not everyone wants to commit to a lifetime in raising and lowering indices. Many people need general relativity for their daily work, right? Astronomers and astrophysicists in particular, string theorists, right? And even people doing things like measuring the rotation of the Earth, right? Every so often have to, for example, if they use the quasars as a reference frame, have to correct for the annoying deflection of light when one of those quasars is located too near the sun. Many people are interested in the subject. You only have to look at the famous popular books, Black Holes and Time Warps, Brief History of Time, etc., to see that, or just to see the number of times it's mentioned in colloquia and even in general discussion. The usual argument is it's too difficult to teach general relativity undergraduates because there's too much mathematics. It's not that the mathematics is so difficult. They could have been taught it a lot earlier, but they don't come equipped with it. But people who say that are thinking about teaching the subject from the logically correct order. First, develop the necessary mathematical tools, then motivate the field equations and deduce their general properties, then solve the field equations and apply in interesting circumstances. That is a very long story. And it's very difficult to do that for undergraduates. But many years ago, I noticed that we don't teach all subjects in the logical order. Electromagnetism, for example, nobody says, well, they have to take 1 year of Stokes' theorem, and then in the next year, we can write down Maxwell's equations, and the third year, we can solve for the plane wave, and so forth. You start right away, not with the general structure of the theory, but with the special examples. So there's another order which is possible, which is can be loosely characterized as physics first. Right? First, motivate the ideas of geometry and geodesics by which you explore geometry. Then simply exhibit the special geometries, weak field solutions, approximately Newtonian solutions, the Schwarzschild geometry, Friedman, Robertson, Walker models, plane waves, linear plane waves, slow rotation, Kerr geometry, and so forth, and then study how to explore these for physical predictions, getting at immediately the solar system tests, black holes, the Big Bang, relativistic stars, gravity wave detectors, and so forth. That requires much less mathematics to start off with. It requires, you have to motivate the idea of a metric, but not necessarily the idea of a tensor in general, because you only use one tensor, a metric tensor. You have to introduce the notion of geodesics as curves of extremal length, but typically students at the undergraduate levels had just had a course in mechanics, so they know about variational principles, and they also know how to solve orbit problems. In fact, many of my students are amazed to find that after a sort of dry course in mechanics, that the subject actually has some applications, even though it's in a sort of advanced number of dimensions. You need the idea of vectors. But you don't need tensors right away. Dual vectors, covariant derivatives, curvature, Lie derivatives, manifold, the abstract index notation, etc., all of which are very important subjects, but you don't have to start with them to get at the physics. And in general relativity, this approach is particularly appropriate because through some miracle, whose origin I basically don't understand, the simplest solutions are the ones that are most physically relevant. The sun is approximately spherical. The universe, on scales above several hundred megaparsecs, is approximately homogeneous and isotropic, and even more miraculously, it's flat, right? Well, there are explanations for these. Gravity waves, at least at the Earth, are weak. So an awful lot of physics can be done with very simple examples. Then later, if time permits, you can go into the mathematics of curvature, the Einstein equations, and derive those special solutions once they came. For maybe 25 years, my colleagues and I at Santa Barbara have been teaching a course, Physics 131 it's called, organized along those lines. Not just me, not just Gary, but even ordinary astrophysicists, for example, are teaching it right now. It's only 10 weeks long. The important thing is it doesn't require a specialist, right, to do it. It just has, these are the topics we usually cover. Geometry is physics, why geometry is a physical quantity, special relativity to introduce the notions of space-time, why the principle of equivalence motivates a geometrical theory of gravity, a little bit of machinery of space-time as I described, geodesics, and then the special solutions, virtual geometry, solar system test, black holes, gravitational waves, and cosmology. That's about as much as we can cover. Notice we, in fact, rarely get to the Einstein equations. In fact, sometimes we've traded off cosmology for the Einstein equations. But the important thing about this sequence is, typically the problem in courses, is if you move down, if you stop at any one place, you haven't just assembled a bunch of tools for interesting subjects, you've learned some interesting subjects. It seems to work. Also, as I'm discovering now, it's also not a bad way to introduce the subject to graduate students, because many of them are not committed necessarily to a lifetime in relativity. So it works. So I'm writing this textbook. It's based on a few principles. Physics first, as I said, as simple as possible, but not simpler. This is a famous quote attributed to Einstein, but one of the troubles with writing these things is you have to check every single thing. So try and find where Einstein said this. I finally called Alice Calaprice, who's the keeper of Einstein quotes at Princeton, and she said she'd been working for years trying to find out where Einstein said it. And he didn't say it. Apparently, it's one of those things he said, and people picked up on it, but he never wrote it down. And I think so. It's attributed to Einstein. And to connect with at least with the phenomena of gravitational physics, which nowadays even is contrasted as the time the great classic textbooks such as Misner, Thorne, and Wheeler were written are much more extensive. The global positioning system, solar system tests, X-ray binaries, black holes and galactic nuclei, the GPB experiment, the binary pulsar, gravitational lensing, neutron stars, the Big Bang and gravitational waves. So that's the effort I'm engaged in. Just to quote my colleague Joel Polchinski, when we had a little party for him finishing his book, he said, "At any one time, it turned out I was always halfway there." And I suppose that's where I am. I'd like to leave with you with one moral, however, and that is, don't do this. It takes more time than you think. Thanks very much. No, I have a publisher. It'll come out in about a year's time. I'm halfway. Well.
Do you have it electronically, or at least parts of it, or something?
I have little pieces of it here and there, I think I should wait till I get it sort of in shape. I don't want embarrassing for copies going around.
Are you planning your second volume?
A second volume? Well, I think once, if the idea succeeds, I think it's possible to write many, for other people to write more successful textbooks than I can. Bill?
What background do you assume?
That's a good question. So, I assume they've had mechanics. That's it. No, the usual sort of intermediate level mechanics course. Because they need the variational principles and they need to be able to solve orbit problems involving, say, the Keplerian ellipse, that sort of level of thing.
For Einstein quotes on simplicity, he talked to John Norton.
John Norton.
The chairman of the philosophy of science, or history of science department at Pittsburgh.
Okay, we'll do.
There, in fact, has been a consortium of historians of science who've been probing into Einstein's views on things like this in recent years.
Okay.
So there was just, about, say, before yesterday, an hour seminar on precisely this issue.
On as simple as possible, but not simpler? I thought I was stretching a topic out.
Jim. Serious question.
No, you do talk about tidal forces, for example, but you talk about them directly in terms of geodesics, right, rather than, for example, writing down the equation, geodesic equation, a deviation at least initially. Yeah, no, you're a person who's talking about tidal forces.
There's a small book Have you ever used that in
Well, I started out, of course, every professor that teaches their own course likes their own book, so I've never tried that book. There are a great many books at this level, but they tend to do things in a watered-down version of the other order. And I think that's true also with Bill's book, if I remember correctly.